Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. You know, I host this radio program every day, and I'm pretty much, if you're listening, you know that. But some of you may not know that I'm also a professor at the UW-Madison, and I teach classes, and I advise students. And I was really interested and intrigued by this new book that's out by David Kirp. It's called The College Dropout Scandal, and I read it with great interest. It's really, he's a great writer, and with my jaw dropping on occasion because I was learning quite a bit. I mean, at the UW-Madison, we have about an 87% graduation rate, which is pretty high. I think 90% of our freshmen make it to their second year, which is also pretty good, but there's still, for us, there's still that 13% or so who don't graduate, and why aren't they graduating? Other colleges don't fare as well. About, as David Kirp will tell us, of about 4 out of 10 students who start college end up dropping out. David, by the way, is a professor at the University of California at Berkeley, UC Berkeley. He's a contributing writer at the New York Times, a fellow of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, as well as a member of the National Academy of Education. And his new book, as I said, is called The College Dropout Scandal. And I can highly recommend it to you. And as you listen, did you drop out of college? What could have helped you stay? We'd love to hear from you with your own questions about this whole area. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And David Kirp with us by phone today, by the way. Thank you, David, for joining us. I really appreciate it.
It's great to be back.
What brought the college dropout problem to your attention initially?
Well, I was hearing about a great program at City University of New York, and they had tripled the graduation rate at their community colleges. Students who participated were graduating at 3 times the rate. I thought, okay, well, that means they're graduating in 3 years from community college at about 64%, which then I looked, what's the comparison? Well, most urban schools graduate their students, their community college students, at 16%. That is 1 out of 6 graduates in 3 years. I thought, well, let's take this further. Let's look at universities. And that's what got me into the problem. And frankly, the scandal that I see is,
yeah.
I mean, those numbers, you know, but behind those statistics are stunted futures for kids' lives. I'm interested in hearing from folks who dropped out. Maybe they're struggling. People say to me, well, look, Bill Gates made it. And I say, you know, anecdote plus anecdote equals anecdote. Most college students who drop out wind up with debt, which they can't pay for. They can't get decent jobs. Their default rate on their loans is 3 and 4 times higher than the graduates. That means they can't get a mortgage. And downstream, they've got health problems. They're not participating in politics as much. Big effects, billions and billions of dollars, as well as I'm saying, all these other impacts on students, huge impacts on taxpayers because we're spending money that isn't making a difference. And the scandal is universities, there are strategies out there. There are strategies out there that can move the needle on graduation rates and shrink the opportunity gap. And I want to take the opportunity, since I was sitting here looking at this, looking at the Wisconsin figures. Now, you're right, the overall graduation rate's pretty impressive, but there's a 10-point gap between the overall graduation rate and the graduation rate for new-gen students. That is poor kids, underrepresented minorities. Those students just aren't making it as well. And there are universities not so very different from Wisconsin that have much smaller gaps. There are universities in which those new-gen students are actually graduating at a higher rate. So your university has some work to do.
Oh, absolutely. And I was going to actually bring that number up, too, in the discussion, because we are very well aware of it here, for sure. And you know,
I hope we do talk about it, because I have lots of admiration for the University of Wisconsin. And I'll be very interested to hear just how the university is confronting a problem they're aware of. Everybody's aware of the problem. The question is, what are they doing that's working?
And that's the thing, and I really love the examples and the information that you provide in your book about what successful schools are doing to turn this around. It's, you know, it is a little easier here at the University of Wisconsin, where we're not dealing with inner city issues, for example, or maybe first generation issues that other schools are, and so it's from my point of view, I'm not going to rave about what we do, but I think we're trying very hard, and I think some of the things that you talk about and what makes a success, why does someone stay in school? What can you do to make people stay in school or help them stay in school? And oftentimes there are things that don't even cost a lot.
That's exactly right. I mean, there are strategies out there that are, I bet you if you asked the folks in the administration, you know, what could we do? What strategies work? They would know the answer. They would tick off most of the things that we can talk about. And they don't cost a mint. They don't take geniuses to implement. And I'm a solutions guy, and I begin the book by talking about, well, here's the problem, which we just laid out. And the question is, okay, what can we do about the problem? And I do what I always do when I'm writing. I go and visit and look and talk to people. And I was looking for schools where the graduation rate had risen pretty dramatically and where the opportunity gap had shrunk. And I'm looking at schools, not very many schools in the top tier like University of Wisconsin. I mean, University of Texas is the one big university exception, but these are the mid-tier schools. You know, these are the University of Wisconsin Green Bay kind of schools that are doing well, because that's where American students go. You know, they don't go to the elite colleges. I mean, the number of folks who are at the, you know, the flagships. I love the flagships. I teach at one. They get a lot of attention, but I'm really focused on where is America educating its college youth and how are we falling down.
Dana in Milwaukee has a comment. Dana, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi. Thank you. My frustration with this whole topic is, and I haven't read the book, so maybe this is addressed, is that quite a number of people in college don't belong there because, number one, maybe their high school has been really, you know, the high school has not met their needs. But I think there's so many other alternatives that exist for going to college, and we don't. I think Wisconsin actually pursues them much better than other states, but we don't pursue them very well so that people can have meaningful careers to support their families that are not college. And so maybe some of these people are not graduating because this is not the right choice for them.
So it's a great question, and let me try to unpack it. First of all, hats off to Wisconsin for the way in which it sets up its two-year colleges. I don't know if anybody else has picked up this idea that you can get a really good technical education and you can get a really good education that prepares you for the University of Wisconsin system. But when you talk about students who don't belong in college, while I agree that there are lots of students for whom a good career, a good skill job career, being an electrician or a plumber or a nurse assistant, these are good jobs, and there are jobs to be had. You don't want to say to students, you're not college material, if that's what they want to do. And let me tell you a little story about one of my favorite programs. Again, it's the City University of New York. And so there, I sat in a class of students who just fit your description to a T, and I would have agreed with you when I started out. These kids failed every one of their entrance exams. They were really doing third-grade math. They were having problems with negative numbers and fractions. Their writing was three-paragraph essays. And then I come back 2 months later, 2.5 months later, and they are simplifying square roots, and they are parsing ambiguities in a V.S. Naipaul short story, which, for those of you who haven't read Naipaul, is a pretty tricky thing to do.
Yes.
That is, the math that they're doing is exactly the same math that somebody who wants to take the GMATs and go to the business school at the University of Wisconsin, same math that they take. That's 2 months, 2.5 months.
Yeah.
And you know, you get kids with a drive and ambition. What does that tell you? It tells you those kids are smart. And, you know, a problem with the kids don't belong there is you can look at two schools whose first-year profile is exactly the same. That is, they're admitting the same students with the same kind of SATs, the same high school grades. And those schools are going to have wildly different six-year graduation rates, 20% difference in graduation rates.
And we're going to talk about why that is the case with our guest today. It's really great to have David Kirp with us, professor at UC Berkeley and author of The College Dropout Scandal. We'll take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back with David. So stay with us. Well, students who drop out of college usually end up with a lot of debt and not a lot to show for their time in college. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, talking about that today with David Kirp. There's a great new book. It's called The College Dropout Scandal. He's a professor at the University of California, Berkeley, contributing writer at the New York Times, a fellow of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, and a member of the National Academy of Education. So what do you think colleges can do to help keep students in school? I hope you'll join in the conversation. We're going to hear what David Kirp thinks as we visit with him. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And David, as we were breaking for news, you were talking about the fact that you can have a couple of universities or colleges that are similar in terms of the demographics of the students that come, but one may have 20% more success keeping its students and graduating them than the other.
Exactly. And the other statistics that's kind of set fire to your hair stat is that you'll have two schools with identical graduation rates, and the opportunity gap can be zero or 20 or 30%. So, and where did I get all this? And where should parents be looking? They should look at collegeresultsonline.org, collegeresultsonline.org. All the numbers are there. I mean, all the basic numbers about finances, et cetera. But this is an important statistic that, parents and students in high school who are thinking about where to go to university, they may know all about the programs, they may know about campus life, but they probably don't check into dropout rates. And if they're new gen students, they don't particularly look at the dropout rates for that group because, they're not a statistic. But if they're going to play the odds, it makes sense to, all things equal, go to the school that's likelier to give them a diploma.
Yeah, for sure. There's even before they get to school, you talk about summer melt.
Yeah, I learned a lot in writing this book. I mean, and one of the things that I discovered was summer melt, which I used to think was when the Good Humor Man came and you bought your ice cream, and by the time you opened the wrapper, it was melting. But no, it turns out to be a higher education term for students who get accepted to a college, pay their down payment in April, May, and then never show up. And those figures, again, at your regional universities, those figures can be 20, 25, 30% of the accepted students. That's the problem. And it turns out to be really easy to shrink that problem. One of the reasons, of course, is that students decide, as the first caller was saying, that college isn't for them, or they've got family obligations that they have to meet. But others are just overwhelmed by the paperwork that they've got to submit before they show up on campus. They've got to get their high school grades turned in. They've got to sign up for an orientation program. They may have to sign up for first semester classes. And the biggest one is they've got to fill out their federal financial aid form. And let me tell you, I've looked at it, and I would want help. And so what the intervention that works is, send them texts which say, your financial aid form is due next week, and if you're having a hard time handling it, we can help. And at Georgia State, one of the great schools in this area that's done amazingly good work, they cut the dropout rate by a third, the summer melt rate by a third, just by sending out texts. And it's basically a zero-cost, huge benefit program. It brought them 450 more students in their seats and not wishing that they were at university.
Yeah. Nick in Brookfield has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Nick.
Okay, before I get into this, I think education is super important. I mean, I believe in it 100%, but when I met my wife, she's at University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, and I think her problem was that she was pushed so hard in high school, that's all she did was study. So when she got to UWGB, all she did was party and stuff, and never took it serious. And I never got to go to college, but I'm still paying a $25,000 student loan because she's got a part-time job now. And those 2 years were just a waste. It makes me sick to my stomach that we're paying that and we got nothing for it. There's no benefit for it.
No, it's true. That problem is not unusual. And I don't know the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, so I don't want to speak out of turn. But I do know what works for those students. What works is doing what a university can to make those students feel that they belong to a community that cares about them, that regards them as contributors to the institution. And what does that mean? Well, there are a lot of things that you can do to engage students academically, but the biggest thing you can do is expand the number of folks who are there as advisors and counselors, because they can help with academic matters and they can help with life matters as well. Every time I talk to students who are in these programs, you know, they may get a little bit of money, they may get, you know, a little bit of course structuring. What's most important? They say, it's my advisor, and they talk about the advisor, they'll say, you know, she has my back, or they'll say, she's like, you know, my older sister, or she's actually like a second mom. And, you know, think about your wife when she went to college, or think about any 18 or 19-year-old going to college. You know, they're in a very, you know, they're on their own for the first time. And, of course, partying is very tempting. And how do you make academics interesting? Well, you start by figuring out ways of engaging them in the university or the college.
Absolutely. And you help them. And I think advisors, I mean, I've advised students for a long, long time here, and just helping them decide what looking at the options and the things that they may be interested in. A lot of that, you can't do it online. It has to be somebody personally talking to you.
Amen to that. You know, I'm also a fan of Arizona State, which has done well with tons of students. Where I fault them is that they believe you can do this online, and you can do some stuff online. Yeah. You can guide students to what's the most efficient way to get to a degree. But you can advise them on what makes sense for them, where are their passions, and you certainly can advise them about what to do when, you know, life is screwing up, as it does for all of us, but, you know, where it hits the 19, 20-year-old particularly hard. So there is no substitute for the human touch. You know, if you're looking for key one-liners from the book,
that's a big one. Chris and Adams, thanks for calling.
Good afternoon. I'm a first generation from working class on both sides of my family to go to college, and some of us excelled pretty well. I dropped out of school in the middle of my final semester of my undergraduate degree, and I'll get into that in a second, but I was thinking maybe you could just talk about working class kids who have to work 3 part-time jobs and try and juggle that with a class schedule and homework. The second issue, and this happened to me, is that I discovered that there was an awful lot of horrible misogyny going on in the department I was in, and I was sexually harassed by my mentor professor, which is the reason I dropped out. And part of the problem with college is that the hierarchy is not allowing for people to dissent. It's not really welcoming to women or minorities, and that if you complain, there are not suitable ways in most places for you to get through the maelstrom of problems that you have just foisted upon yourself by saying something about it, because getting rid of a tenured professor is almost impossible.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Chris, for calling. Comments?
Oh, yeah, that's a fantastic question. You know, again, I don't know the school, but I do know this. That's an institution that needs a culture makeover. And if the person who's running the school and the deans that are running the school aren't capable of doing that, it needs people who are actually running better people in that job. You know, if I don't know the graduation rate of that university, but I do know that if you take that average graduation rate, 60% in 6 years, not the normal 4 years, but 6 years, and that were true in a high school, that high school would be labeled a dropout factory, and a principal would be looking for a job. And the problem, a big problem, is that there's no accountability at the higher education level. Nobody gets fired because of because of dropout rates. You know, I do want to talk about the misogyny question because that's crucial. And, you know, if the university isn't going to tackle that in 2019, you pick up the paper any day and you see examples of what that looks like. And university professors, you're right, they're pretty, you know, they can be pretty imperious. You know, and you as a student have a hard time dealing with that. That really is something for the campus to take seriously. And again, as with every one of these issues, if they decided to do that, there are strategies out there that have been shown to work that are not going to cost them $1 trillion, but are going to offend some folks. You're going to be breaking some eggs, and you've got to be willing to do that as a leader of an institution if you call yourself a leader.
And Chris's comment about dropping out with just a semester or a few courses to go, you address that in other ways. I mean, there are other reasons why students drop out in their fourth year.
Yeah, I was wondering where that was going. One important reason that students drop out is because their loan money is run out and they're $500 or $1,000 short. They just don't have that money. And how did the university find out about this? It asked the treasurer, you know, what's going on here? And so what do the smart universities do? They give students scholarships for $500 or $1,000. And that makes a huge difference. It really affects not just the students who are staying there and the numbers. It also affects their attitudes because they may have thought the university basically saw its students as check writing machines. But here you get the university saying, we're giving you this money. And when they started this program, the students thought it was a total scam. They just didn't believe the university was going to do that. And they just turned around in terms of their attitude toward the university. They got that the university had their back.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. Peter in Eau Claire will give you a chance. Hi, Peter.
Yep. Hello there. Thanks for taking my call. Two things. One, I'm 65 years old, and I've been through, I've got a master's degree, and I worked at universities for 15 plus years and everything, and as an administrator. There's really two parts to this that I see. One is that there's an enrollment requirement for universities to meet. They need to have the dollars coming in. And so I see I'm retired right now, by the way. So what I saw was that there were students on the margins being admitted, which, okay, that's fine. But the other thing that I know is going back to my early years is that when I went to college, I was really lacking in my math, and they had remedial programs for that. And ironically, that worked out, and my professional life dealt in a great part with finance. So apparently something worked out well there. And so I think part of what's going on is that we're admitting students that are not totally rounded for college, but also we're not providing the support, the remedial educational opportunities that will help them in those areas that they need.
Great points. And let me tackle the money pressure, because it's big. If Wisconsin is behaving like most states, you know, it keeps defunding or cutting the funds for universities. And then, you know, the legislators say, but you can't increase tuition. And they can't do, it's not even remedial math. They can't do first grade math. You know, you've got to, if the money isn't going to come from the state, it's got to come from someplace. And the someplace is tuition. And, you know, sadly, a lot of state schools are looking to out-of-state students, ignoring their own students that may have better credentials because out-of-state students bring more dollars with them. So that's a huge issue. The margin, but if the way they're dealing with the way the institution is dealing with that is marginal students, you really hit the nail on the head. I think that the schools that have been successful are schools that know. I mean, they can either use fancy data analytics, big number crunching, or they can look at the record and say, you know, this kid comes from a poor background. has had a mediocre high school education, scores aren't great, right at the margin, what can we do? Well, we can start out the summer before they show up. And those summer programs don't have to be programs for dummies. They can include courses that undergraduates at the university want to take as well. And then there are really student success courses. And those, when those programs are designed well, they really work. The students who are in them do a whole lot better than the students who didn't take them. And in some places, they actually do better than the overall student body. So that's something to do. I want to take up math for a second.
Yeah.
And gently disagree with you. If you look at the stats, students who get consigned to remedial math, 70% of those students at community colleges and about 60% at four-year schools fail that class the first time out. And what does that mean? Then they take it a second time, and about 30% of them fail. Well, just, again, imagine you're being told, you know, you aren't college material. And, again, there are tools out there. There are programs out there like StatWays and QuantWays that have been developed and shown to work that really, what they, for one thing, what they do is they say, you know, students don't really need advanced algebra or calculus unless they're going to go into a STEM field or unless they're going to go into finance, as you did. What they need is statistics. And these programs are designed to integrate the catch-up material with the statistics material, and the students who were in that same position as you, who went into the remedial class, 80% of those students wind up getting college-level credit at the end of that year. Again, that's compared to 70% of the students have to take the course over again, so the basic course over again. So there, again, if you're sitting in administrative, in the provost chair, whoever it is that's responsible for academic programs, your job is to say, okay, we've got a student success problem. We've got a dropout problem. We've got to acknowledge that, and then we've got to make it clear that dealing with that problem is a priority. And if we get there and we create an administrative structure that has everybody in the cabinet, the president's cabinet, on board, then you go look for where are the roadblocks. What is it that's keeping students from graduating? We've talked about some of these issues, and you raise another one, which is the math issue. And let me tell you, as somebody who was math phobic and had to take a combined calculus physics course and only scraped by because of the physics part of this, you know, it was a terribly taught course, and we know how to do a whole lot better. There are schools out there that are using a whole variety of tools that are doing better. And again, this is not brain science. This is taking the issue seriously and then, you know, doing your homework.
Yeah. Thank you, Peter, for calling. John in Oconomowoc, give you a chance. Hi.
Hi. I agree with a lot of the comments from the guest, but I guess I have a point in another direction I'd like to make. And that is 28 years ago, I was a college freshman, 28 years ago this week. And we were told, look to your left and look to your right. And in 4 years at graduation time, one of you likely won't be there. And while that was a scary message, it brought across the point that when we did graduate, when we got that piece of paper 4 years later, it meant something because we were some of those that we not only survived, that we thrived.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if you had gone to the Marines and your drill sergeant said on day one, look to the left of you, look to the right of you, I would get it. But that's a terrible message. Again, yeah. Do the math. If you've got a school in which two-thirds of the students are dropping out, all those problems I described are real problems. And it's not just on the students. It's also on the universities. And when they have figures like that, they are falling down on the job.
They are indeed. And, you know, I think if you think back, probably most or many universities were like John's, and hopefully that, I'm certain that is not no longer the case here. We always tell students here that when we're very happy that you're here and we're going to do everything we can. I mean, this is almost verbatim. We're going to do everything we can to help make you to help you succeed and be successful. And
that's the right message. And again, because I have no doubt you're a good teacher and you're a good advisor and you care about your students, you know, go find, and I'm sure you teach well, but the question is what beyond the rhetoric, every university in the planet says verbatim what you just said. and they walk, they talk the talk. And so the question really is, are they walking the walk? And you really have to pin them down on that 10% gap between the new gen students and the overall graduation rate, because that's big. There are comparable universities that have done a whole lot better than Wisconsin, and they can figure out what needs to be done. And they've got it easy, as you said, in part because it's a dominantly white campus and a predominantly middle-class campus. So the number of students that they need to focus on is relatively small. There really is, you know, I'd love to have this conversation 2 years down the road, and you were to tell me they've eliminated that gap, because it's possible to do it.
You prove it in the book. I mean, you show several really wonderful examples of what has been done by other institutions to not only reduce the gap, but almost what you might say obliterate it.
Yeah, well, Georgia State, the new gen students graduated at a rate higher than the overall graduation rate. Now, just take one of your peer institutions, University of Texas. Now, they've got a lot more poor kids and minority kids because they have to admit the top 7% of high school graduates from every school in the state. So that's the top 7% from the Dallas suburbs. That's the top 7% from the poor towns on the Rio Grande. And, you know, there's one guy, one professor who taught chemistry and then became dean of chemistry and then became the student success czar. And I talk about him a lot in the book. Because he says, you know, look what we're saying to these students. We're saying, you don't, you know, we're going to throw you into a killer chemistry course, and we're going to kill your dreams off.
Yeah.
And we're just not going to acknowledge that you need special help. And, you know, what they've done, not just in that course, but campus-wide, again, has been to shrink that dropout rate and, indeed, to really boost the four-year graduation rate. So they're now up to a 70% four-year graduation rate. And those groups that I'm talking about, the groups that the big data number crunches said, those kids are going to flunk out, nope, they're proving them wrong. They've improved at a rate higher than the overall campus rate.
Well, in 2 years, David, I hope we can have this conversation and I can tell you that gap has been obliterated.
Me too. As you can tell, I'm passionate about this. You know, and if people want to follow my musings and follow my work, they can go to David Kirp on davidkirp.com, a new website. Unlike Joe Biden, I can actually get it out in one phrase.
David Kirp, and David's last name is spelled K-I-R-P. Great to have him with us today, and I really would like to have him back and talk some more with us about this area, for sure. We'll get him back. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, Guru Neil DeBole, guru from the prairies, will be talking with us about prairie gardens. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.